Okay.
This here is the seniority list of when I worked in the elevator. Here's when I started.
Ah. Wow. Okay, let's just get started. Please start by giving your name and describing how you came to work in the grain industry.
Well, okay, my name is Bob Speak. I started in the grain elevator in 1951. How I come to work there, I was working for Commonwealth Construction, pushing a buggy of cement and nail for $1 an hour. And they offered me a job, 99 cents an hour, and all I had was just a little sample scoop and a little sample dish, which didn't weigh 20 pounds compared to 150 pounds on the construction job, and it was only a penny less than an hour. So I said, Jesus, this, I gotta go here. I ain't pushing that buggy of cement anymore. So that's, I went there, I went in the morning, I went around 9 o'clock. I seen Mr. Tenure, who was the superintendent then, or the general foreman, I can't remember which position he held, but anyways, he did the hire, and they hired right in the elevator in them days. You went down there, they looked at you, they felt your muscles, and if you could lift about 50 pounds next, they'd hire you. So he says to me, how old are you, son? I says, I'm 17. Oh, he says, you got to be 18 to work in the elevator. I says, oh, okay. He says, how old are you, did you say? I says, I said I'm 18. Can you start at noon? I mean, 12 o'clock today, I said. He said, yep. I says, I can start. So I went home. Had something to eat, came, put my old clothes on, went back, and I started there at noon.
Do you remember what day that was? What date?
It was August the 24th.
Oh, you've got it in your sheet here.
Yeah,
yes.
It's in there. It's August 24th, I'm pretty sure it is. And that's how I came to work in the elevator, and then I... August the 24th, 1951, I started. And at one time, Sass Wheat Pool had over 1,000 people on the seniority list. Now they're down to about 80.
And when you say Sass Wheat Pool, that would be all the Saskatchewan pool elevators here?
Yeah, I was, that was.
And did you rotate or did you work in one?
I started at Pool 4A. In Current River. Then I went from 4A to 4B. Then I went way over to Westworth. The Sass Wheat Pool had a Saskatchewan Wheat Pool number 5 over there. And I worked over there for a while. Then I went to Pool 6. And I stayed there for about 20, 25 years. Just in that one elevator. And then finally they closed that up. And I got shifted over to Pool 7. And I was in management then, so I wound up at Pool 7B, and then they kept me there for maybe a year, and then I went over to 7A, one of the largest elevators in the world. It holds 12 million bushels of grain. Pool 4 was about 8,000 or 9,000 bushels of grain, and Pool 6 was 6,000 bushels of grain. And then they sent me to Pool 7, and that's where I retired from in 1990. But I've spent most of my life, and then 1952, I was at Pool 4A. Half the crew would work noon hour, the other half would get off. It was my unlucky day, it was my day to work. And at 12 o'clock, kaboom, the elevator blew up. And I was standing on the cleaner deck talking to Harry Hansen. Yeah, he's passed away now, but he He went one way, the dust blew us one, like just like somebody took a cigarette paper on your hand and went, blew it off your hand. And it just threw me up against the wall and filled my eyeballs up with dust. Then when I finally did get my bearing on what was happening, I wiped my hands, and next thing you know, I was in a wall of fire. Walked around in a wall of fire maybe for 30 seconds. My ears were burning, my eyebrows were. In them days, you didn't wear hard hats, you just wear mitts, eh? So I had the mitts on the front of me trying to protect my face, and then my ears on back and forth. In the meantime, I'm trying to get out of the elevator. I tried to get out through the door on the boat side, eh? So I could jump in the water. Because my clothes were all on fire, and they wouldn't, door, I couldn't get it open because the explosion jammed it shut so hard. They were big, heavy-duty steel doors, eh? And it just jammed shut, and I couldn't pull it open, and I wasn't going to waste any time, because then I went back the other way, and I bumped into this fella, Steve, and the two of us. We were running down the track, and bricks were falling about 120 feet up. Down, bricks that you lay on the side of a house were falling from 120 feet up. They hit Steve, the guy running beside me, threw him ahead of me, and peeled the back of his head back like a banana. You'd peel a banana. And he just fell on the ground there with the bricks were coming. I just, my hands over my head, I just kept running because he was gone anyway. There was nothing you could do for him, and if I'd stayed there, I'd have been buried too.
Is that what happened? Did the roof fall in?
No, the elevator blew. It just blew up, and I guess by the time we got out of there, everything was starting to come back down again. And it was just like raining bricks. And if you didn't have much choice, you stayed in the elevator, you'd fry to death. If you ran outside, you got killed by the bricks. You had a choice. Which way you wanted to go. I took my chances running.
How did you actually get out? Did you run in? Did you jump into the lake?
No, I ran down to the... There was sort of an embankment, and that's how I broke my arm, because there was grain doors there. Somebody was picking... In them days, they used to take grain doors home and burn them for firewood. Broken ones. And they... And I jumped on the... jumped on him when I was running down the bank, eh? And the two boards with that grain in between was like bearings.
Oh, wow.
And my feet just went out, and they used to use 4-inch spikes to put them in on the door, eh? But it didn't go through my hand, it went through my mitt, but missed my hand and went through there. But that was the bad part, because it anchored my hand down on the board. And then it just tore everything right around my arm. You could hear everything just ripping in there. I just grabbed my arm and I just kept running. Got up to the shack there, my clothes were burning a little bit. And then they took me to the hospital and cut all my... The only sad thing about it is I had my hockey jersey on. I was proud of that jersey, and then they bandaged you all up. And I was lucky. I got Dr. Baker. He was an army doctor from overseas. These other guys, they had doctors from here, and they used ointment on their face. All he ever did to me was just tape up my face and my hands and everything. And then a nurse came in every hour, and she watered them down. Just soaked them down with water. And then when he cut it off, it's just like I had all new skin.
Wow.
And that was the end of my explosion. And
what did the hospital look like? Were there
lots of people? They took all, yes. We had the whole one floor. All the one floor at the general hospital. You couldn't find a mirror on that floor. They took every mirror out of there. So that I snuck down to the other floor to see what the hell I looked like. If you ever shave your eyebrows off, or you'd muffs. It was an awful looking sight.
Yeah, but...
But I got out of there alive.
Lucky man.
Yeah.
How long had you been working there?
Well, I was started in 51, 1 year.
So you'd been there about a year when it blew up?
Yeah, about a year, yeah.
We'll probably return to that, because that's a huge event for the whole city. But can you just describe a routine work-a-day?
Work-a-day?
When would it begin?
It'd start at 8 o'clock. You'd go in, and you go in the... I worked on the cleaner deck, so I'd go in the cleaner deck office, and the cleaner deck foreman would... there'd be five cleaner men there and five shippers. And he'd say to the cleaner men, you come ahead with bin 23 on your set, you 27 on your set. And he'd tell all the cleaner men, ask the scale for a light. You had to have a light before you could put grain up the legs. So they'd ask for a light on the two, and then he'd give me a slip and he'd say, you go down the basement, line all the belts up, and I want bin 548 up on two. And you got to go down on nine and get it, or 10 or 12 off the other way, and then you set the tripper so it goes on this belt, this one, or this one, whatever one you want. You can bring it up different ways.
How would the cleaning machine work?
How does the cleaning machine work? Well, the grain goes from the box. First of all, when they unload the boxcar, I never worked in the car shed right away. When you unload a boxcar, in them days they shoveled it.
Yes.
They had two cables and a board. The board weighed about 35, 40 pounds. And you would trip it, the cable, and it would come ahead. And you just steered it in the grain until you got the whole boxcar. It took you about maybe 5 to 10 minutes to shovel one end. There was two guys in a boxcar, one on each end, and you'd shovel.
And they both had these boards?
Yeah, you both had a board, both that size. Not quite that long, maybe 6 inches long, but both that size, and it had handles on it.
Yeah,
and it had
so
a
you'd
cable.
Be hauling a couple of 100 pounds of grain every time you...
Well, you just more steered it, because the cable on the bottom pulled.
Who operated the cable?
That was automatic up there.
Okay.
When you pulled it back so far, it clicked in.
Okay.
And it came ahead.
Yep.
As soon as you got to the back, you knew that was going to trip in up there, and you got your foot away from the cable. The one fella didn't, and it cut his foot off. You had to make sure you were on the other side of the board. Because when that cable went in the grain, so you could get as much as you can to go up the door. And two of you would come at the same time and you meet at the door, and the grain would just pile up and go down onto the hopper. And you did five cars in the morning, two guys, and then five cars after dinner. You did 10 cars and then you could go home. You'd start off in the morning with a parka and you'd wind up with a t-shirt. And then the grain would go into a hopper from the car, and then there'd be a belt underneath there. The belt would take the grain, go up a leg, and the leg's got buckets on it, like that. And the grain would go in, they'd fill the buckets, and they'd be going fast, they'd about 20 miles an hour, going in there. And up it would go, and up to there, and it would go into what they called a garner. And then go in the garner, and the scale floor man would open the garner and put it into the scale, balance the scale, weigh it, the car's all up, they'd close, shake the garner and close it, make sure nothing was in it. And then they can give them a light for the next car.
Okay.
And then they'd be weighing this car. And then after it's weighed, then they'd put it into the spout. It would go down into the bin floor, and they'd put it into the bin 25 or 27, and that'd be cleaner bin. And then they would clean it, and it would go into the cleaners. There are usually four machines to a cleaner. It'd take about 40 minutes to clean the car in them days, one side. And it had to go back again the second time. And now they got machines right now that'll clean it all in 25 minutes, both sides.
Right.
And them days they didn't have it. They had all they couldn't keep up to the cars that were coming in. They had, but now these machines they got now.
When you say cleaning, what exactly happens during the process? Are you cleaning dust out of it or something?
They take the only thing they throw away is the sticks, the stones, and the paper that comes out. When the grain's gone into the hopper after you've unloaded it, there's a big magnet. Nails, money, saws, hammers. Bing! Bing! Never gets to the elevator. And that would go up and then, and the sticks, and they had what they call scalpers on the top of the cleaners where the grain came through, and you had to clean that scalper out. And the scalper would be going around and around, and it'd take the straw, throw it down into a bag, and it was down a spout. And there was a bag hooked on there, straw bag we used to call them. They didn't throw that at boilers to dry the grain.
Right. So that's a separate process. Is it drying? It's a separate process from cleaning?
All different, yeah.
Yes.
But anyways, and then you'd get stones would come down there, sticks, and then on the bottom, coming out of the bottom of the machine, they'd have what they call the byproduct. Seeds and buckwheat and everything would come out of the grain, eh? Take it out. And they'd put that away too. And so, somewhere down the line somebody would buy it or they'd give it to the farmers here or something.
You do 5 cars per half shift, morning and afternoon.
You shovel 5 cars in the morning, and you shovel 5 cars after dinner, and then you went home.
When you got a car,
open, and the inside door was like this, across the grain doors.
Yes.
And you had to, when the car was coming in, they had a steel pole. And it had jaws on this end.
Yep.
So when they're pulling the car in, you just stuck that on the board.
Yep.
And push it right in. And they had some over, that was at pool 4. But then when I went to pool 5, they didn't have that there. They had axes. You had to chop. And that was... You were tuckered out by the time you got into the car, let alone do the car.
It sounds like a really demanding physical job.
Well, yeah, when you first started in the elevator, they weren't looking for anybody with BAs and DAs. They were looking for guys with a strong back and a weak mind. That's what they wanted. They wanted laborers. They didn't want to... Then in long 1970, all that shoveling was gone.
Right.
They start using dumpers, and then now they got the tankers that nobody has to do anything. It's just the machine just automatically comes now and opens them up just with a push of a button.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. That's when they didn't come and feel your muscle anymore or take a look and see that you're physically fit. What education you got now, you know? And my experience working with, I worked in the grain elevator for 40 years, and I tell you, some of the greatest guys that were ever foremen were the guys that, and bosses, that actually did the job themselves. Then in the later years, we started to get, what I used to call them was whiz kids. And, they could write the... We used to, when we were in management, we used to have to do tests and that, eh? Well, I'd take an hour, they'd take 10 minutes, because they had the education, and I never was very good at spelling. So, you know, by the time I figured out how to spell that word, they already did 2 or 3 lines, so But education took over because you didn't need anybody with physically fit anymore after 1971. All them jobs were automatic, and they were going to the computer and everything else. See, my job for, I guess 15 years was estimator. I estimated all the bins and everything. How much grain, and I'd fill out a sheet every day. How much, they used to, in them days, they call it one northern, two northern, three northern. And then now they've gone into one red, 12, 5, they've gone into the protein end of it, so.
Oh, yes,
One northern, two northern, three northern, four northern, five wheat, six wheat, and then different stuff like that. They change it around.
Just a silly little aside, but what would you do if you had a car full of barley?
Car full of barley, you'd unload it.
Didn't you find that that drove you crazy?
The little thin.
Yes.
Oh yes, yeah. And in them days, we never had showers at home.
No.
Never had showers in the elevator either. And that was brutal.
Yeah.
You'd be itching steady.
Yes.
Yeah, and barley was hard to shovel. We didn't, our barley was 1 feet, 2 feet, 3 feet, and stuff like that. Canada Malt had the two-row and three-row barley and that. They had the better stuff, eh? We couldn't make beer with ours. We didn't pearl the barley. The barley just came in, we cleaned it, and Canada Malt, they had the pearlers there. They could husk them, eh? And that. Yeah, barley, flax was actually the hardest to shovel.
I gather they had to take special preparations for the boxcars also with oil seeds.
Well, yeah, they were all lined with paper.
Right.
Yeah, that was a headache because the paper would tear in it when you were shoveling it. Then it would get on the hopper, and the hopper, you couldn't get it out of the hopper. You'd plug up the hopper, you'd have to quit shoveling, get down there and try and pull that paper out because it would run down. It was a challenge, that flax.
So on the day that you started work, let's say, if we can go back there, how many people would have been in that elevator?
How many?
In fact, let's take, so how many people would have been there?
I guess in that 4A, that probably, probably about 35, 40 people would have been working. Eh? What's that? In them days, they had lead bearings. Eh? They didn't have bearings like they have now, salt packing and that. Them bearings were just, they used to make them themselves in the wintertime. They'd pour the lead in there and make the bearings. And you had to have an oiler. That was his job. He'd just go from one end of the elevator to the other, and by the time he got done there, he had to start over again and keep the bearings cool, because if they caught on fire, you might have another explosion. So they had an oiler. There was all kinds of positions in the elevator. Foreman. Then you had in each department, like the cleaner deck had the cleaner foreman. And the scale floor had the scale floor foreman. The annex, they had, that's where the grain all went over to the annex to store. Big bins there, and you just put the grain there and they stored it. And when the boat came, you opened it up and went up the legs again. And they had an annex man, they had the grain inspector. He inspected the grain, and if he said it was no good, you shut the bin off and you took another bin. And that stuff that you ran up, they would put it, instead of going to the boat, they'd swing the spout around back to the elevator and put it away or to the annex or into a cleaner bin. And that's way there. It's, if you had a piece of paper, I could show you how that grain goes.
Yes.
I'll get a piece of paper. Yes, a minute. It's because it's talkies or nothing. It's all by lights and done by lights. So then the scale floor, after he got all the grain out of the garner, he'd drop it into here, into the scale, weigh it. After it's all into the scale, he'd close the garner again. Then he could give the guy a light here, and he could start coming with another cart. Different grade. Different grade would be going in here, or sometimes same grade, but different weight. You don't. And there was a government man up there to make sure that you didn't take any grain from this farmer to give it to that farmer, because there could be two different farmers that shipped that grain. In this car, one farmer shipped it, next car might be another farmer, and if you commingle them, he's not going to be.
That's all right.
Now it goes from here, it goes, and what they call, down here they got a, what they call a bin floor. Got a bunch of bins. And over here, is a belt. And this here is spoked. It can go either onto this belt, or it can go to any one of these bins. Okay?
How big would the bins be?
This bins here will hold 5 cars.
Wow.
Okay? So they could go in either into the bins, and underneath the bins is the cleaning machines. Okay? So then you could open up, say you want, these bins are all numbered, they're 25 or 27 or something like that, eh? So cleaner boss would say open up bin 25, so he'd open it up and it would go into this cleaner then, this grain, that came out of here before, into there, from the scale, okay? Now, if all these bins are full, then they'd put it over from here onto here. And this goes over to the annex. Over here. This is your annex. And they got another annex here, annex 1, 2, and 3, and so on. And they got big bins. Over here. All kinds of. No, it ain't here. And there you just go, and they got belts that go under there. So you could put it in any bin you want. Okay, this is the annex. See, and that's from the scale. It could either go into the house, it could go into there, or they could go here. Each scale, here's your scales, like this. He's here, just looking from the top down, okay?
How many cleaning machines?
These are scales, okay? How many?
Mm.
It'll depend on the elevators.
Okay.
Some elevators had 5, some had 6. The average one would be about 5 sets of cleaners, 4 cleaners to each set.
Okay.
That would be it. Now here's your scales, okay? That's this here. Okay, that looking down at it.
Yeah.
And here would be your boat. Okay? Now there's a spout comes out of here. It goes into the hole on the boat. Okay? Comes out, goes into the hole in the boat. Okay, see, this is, and these, the grain trimmers, that, they load the boat from it. So when you're running from the basement then, you wouldn't be coming from here, you'd be coming This is a receiving leg. This receiving leg will hit this scale, or it hit another scale. It's the annex. From these annexes here,
mm-hmm.
down in the basement. This is up above. Down below, in the basement, they have belts that go. And they have a leg that goes up. Same as this one here.
Yeah.
Okay, and that goes up and that goes this way. Throws the grain this way into here. Into this scale, okay, from the basement. You can open this bin or that bin or whatever you want.
You know, it sounds like a lot of energy. It sounds like you've got a lot of machines running these belts and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, there's big motors.
Yeah.
They are big motors.
What do they run on?
Electricity.
Electric.
Yeah. Yeah, see, this is in the basement. This is the basement belt. That's where I work. So I put the grain on this, on two shipper, into this, be two here. So I put open the bin, and the belt was about this wide, and you had to, in them days, they didn't have gauges or nothing to tell you how much grain to put on this belt, so you didn't plug this leg. You did it with the feel of your hand. You knew that the grain was hitting up here. You had too much grain. The belt was going by. You stick your hand in the grain with the grain, and it would tell you. And then you would go up to the front, and they had a canvas thing there, and you open it up, and you could see if the grain was in the buckets and nothing was falling back. You didn't have enough. You had to go open that bin a little more. Then you'd go give it some more of this, and then you'd go up to the front, and then you see the grain slightly coming back. You know it's over, getting overloaded, eh? But if it was really coming back, you'd run like hell to shut the bin off, because you're going to plug this. It would plug.
Who was the person then that made these measurements and calculations? Were you doing that?
What,
to see if there was enough or too much?
Yeah, that's what I was. I was a shipper in the basement.
Yeah.
And then that's how the grain got from the bottom of the annexes. See, the scale would put it over to the annex, and it would also put it onto the boat. See, here's your scales here. These scales are the same scales, but not the same scales. On the same scale floor. The elevator. See, the elevator was like this. And here's your boxcar. And then from there, you had what they called a bin floor. And then you had a bunch of money makers. Money makers. Why they call them money makers was because they took all the buckwheat out and sorted the buckwheat from the rape seeds, and well, they call it the canola now, but all that stuff was sorted out right on this floor. Then they had another floor above that, and then you had your scale floor. And up here was your garners, all in up in there. The scale floor. See?
So on the day that it blew up, where were you? Do you know what exactly happened?
No, I don't know what happened. All I know is that the elevator blew up, and I know where I was. This is the cleaner deck here.
Right.
See, the it read in here, I was the elevator looked like this, and the scales were going out, these things were going out onto the boats, to the boat.
Yeah, from the newspaper report, there was a ship.
Yeah, the Baton, I think it was. And one of these scales that blew out, blew the whole side of the elevator. You could still see it if you went down to Pool 4. You can see where they patched it up. Oh. And it blew this out. There was a guy sitting in there. It blew him out and right onto the deck of the boat. He was eating his lunch. It was the last meal. But anyways, it blew it out onto there, from there. But that's how it works. It comes out of the boxcar, into this hopper, up this belt, up this leg, into this garner, into this, then it's into the scale. They close this back up, and then give him another light so he can start this up again. And the basement is all together, it's belts underneath everything, okay, and big slides and that.
So this system can only handle 5 cars in the morning and 5 in the afternoon, is that right?
On one track.
Okay. How many in a shift, how many boxcars?
See, like Pool 5 had just 2 tracks.
Okay.
So you did 10 cars in the morning and 10 cars in the afternoon. That's 20 cars. But Pool 4, they could do 10, let's see, 10, 20, 30, 40 cars a day they could do. Because they had 4 tracks shoveling. They could have a gang on every track. But not, when you get into a small place like Noon, unless they put another gang on, but then they couldn't get rid of them fast enough.
Right.
The scalper couldn't handle it.
Yes, exactly. So everything is dependent on how fast the system moves.
Yeah, like Pool 6 now, they had 4. They had 4 hoppers there. 4 of these.
Okay.
So when they didn't shovel, well, they did shovel, but it was before my time. They were mostly dumpers that ticked the car up and down, eh? Shook it out that way. First, the car would come up onto the thing, and then the dumper, and then the dumper would tip this way. And then it would go down. So everything, and then automatic slide would go in there. So when it went, the slide would go in. So when it went down this way, it would go up that way. Then that start to go the other way, that slide come out. Another slide from this way would go in and get the grain from the other side. Was one of the guys that...
Would you have been working in dust? Was there a lot of dust?
Are you kidding?
I know.
It was so thick at times you could... See, when I first started in the elevator, there was no such thing as a spout from the ceiling to the floor. It's just you line up the little wee short spout, open the bin, and it'll fall right from the ceiling, right down and into the grate. And there's dust. An annex. I was in the annex at Pool 6. And they were all open bins. There was no floor. The grain went down into the bin and it just came back up. If you had eaten soup, you had to make damn sure you could eat fast or you'd be getting burly, and in your soup would be thick by the time you got finished with it.
With all this machinery flying around, it sounds like safety would be a big concern.
Safety never come into any effect until after the 1952 explosion. At 4B, they did do a lot for safety then. But then, and after the 1952 explosion, then they really got serious about that screenings. They call it the dust as screenings.
Yeah.
Okay, and they never loaded it into boats. Maybe they did the odd one after that, but not too much. It all went into a little sort of a hopper, and it was trucked to pool 7 and made into pellets. They ground it up into pellets. I don't know who ate it. The pigs, I guess. I don't know. Somebody got it.
Yeah.
And that's what they did with the screenies. Like I said, they only threw away the sticks, the stones, and the paper.
Start again. You have with unions during your career, particularly again in the early days?
With Local 650? Yeah, I was with the union right up until I got into management. My union was good. It had its good points and had its bad points, but it was good. Kept the management honest, you know. It's or else they could just do whatever they wanted. But the union kept them fairly honest, and the elevator always was a fairly good paying job.
Yeah,
it was. You know, that's. And when the years of the drying, when the grain from out west came in all wet and that, well, they ran them dryers 3 shifts all winter long. You load the boat, and here with these dryers running, and they split it up too amongst the men, and the union was good that way. It protected a lot of good workers, and it protected a lot of doggers too, but it worked. It'll always balance out that way anyways. You're never going to get it all one way anyways, but it was good that way.
Yeah.
Union was good for the men. It was good for the company too, in a way. So, yeah, I was on a couple of strikes. It was good. Sort of like an extra paid holiday.
But you didn't get paid. Do you remember when and what was the issue and how did it all work out?
Well, it was mostly for for wages and pension. We were always fighting for our pension, and we were lucky that you know, most of the guys that worked there when I worked there, they all got their pensions. And you know, the management you paid into a different fund and that, so it was good.
You have no complaints overall?
Overall, if I had to do it again, I'd do it again. You know, the only thing is, I almost lost my life when I was 17 years old. You know, it was close.
Yeah.
But it was good. I got a bunch of good guys to work with. You got a few, you know, cranky buggers, and a few whiz kids came in there later on, and other than that, it was good.
So the culture of the place was, it was a good place to go to work.
Well, yes, it was. Yeah, it was a good place. It was dusty. But then in them days, after work, you finished your job after 8 hours. You went to stopped at the pub and had a couple of pints of ale and washed all that dust down and away or whatever.
This is a particular interest to me because, talking to you and other people, I'm becoming aware of the number of hockey players that grew up here in the elevator system.
Yeah.
And I guess being in the NHL wasn't like the Stahls is today. You didn't get millions of dollars.
No.
So you had to combine your play and your work.
We went to work a few times hungover, but we did our job. We shoveled our 10 cars and went home, sweated, suffered, went back, and next Friday probably did the same stupid thing again.
How long was shifts?
8 hours. And then if you went back after supper, you for another 3 hours, you went back from 6:30 to 9:30 for for another 3 hours of overtime. That was overtime then, time and a half. And so. But it was, wages were always good. I found them good. You know,
compared to... Do you remember what they were, let's say, for a week or an hour?
Well, when I started, it was 99 cents an hour.
Right.
Yeah, and then when I retired, I believe they were getting $18 an hour.
To start?
Well, it all depends where you started, yeah. Yeah, roughly, yeah. Yeah, that was that and there. I think when I retired, I think the lowest wage was $17 an hour. But then they got all kinds of different, now they got all different categories, and I didn't do it. But anyways, yeah, it's like, and when I got into management, they asked me to go into management. I said I had about 15 years left. Management gets a better pension, so I said, well, I better make a run for it. So I went into management, and I found it harder working with, you know, to in management to have the final say what's going to happen. You know, before I was, somebody up before made the final decision for me, but then when I got into management, it was, hey, you got to make it now. And I thought I did a good job anyways. I got my job done. I went home. When you're loading them boats, if the government says it's no good, you know, there's $180,000 shipment on that boat that the government says it's no good, and you next morning, you're a big boss from uptown that's phoning down, what's going on?
Did that ever happen to anybody?
To me.
Yeah.
I went, well, I better have a third or I won't sleep. So, but anyways, next morning the boss phoned me, what's going on? The shipment's turned down. I says, I'm telling you, sir, it's not turned down, it's good. I know it's good. Well, he says, if we ship it down east and it's still no good, you know what's going to happen, eh? I said, I don't know. I'm telling you right now, it's good. Ship it down east and have it resampled again from then down there. Because this guy that turned it down, I think he's a little bit high society. I said, that ain't high society grain we put on there, so... Anyways, they shipped it down east, and it was good. But I had to wait a week. Every night laying there, well, is this going to be good? $180,000, that's a lot of money. One of the foremen said it was good, and they shipped it down there, and it was no good. They said there was heated oats, and they says, foreman says, no, there's no heated oats in it. And they shipped it down there, and it was heated oats.
What is heated oats?
Heated oats is when it's starting to go bad.
Uh-huh.
That's the easiest way to explain it.
Yeah.
It's got heat in it. Yeah. And it's not, it's, they ask for 3CW oats, and you give them heated oats, it's not very good. So that grain sat there for about 5 years before somebody finally bought it.
Oh.
And they had to pay storage on it and everything.
Wow. How long does grain keep?
How long? Oh, it all depends on the climate, eh? If you got the right climate, they could probably stay in there for 10 or 15 years.
Mm.
But if it's damp, you know, and or it's really hot.
Could those conditions be created?
Them elevators in the basement, you could go there right till August. And it'll be this temperature right here, right now, in August.
Yeah.
Everybody outside be walking around in a t-shirt, and I'd have a jacket on down there. Singing to the rats and the mice.
Well, that's a question, too. I I'd like to just jump back and think about cleaning again. You've told me most of the residues. Did you have, what happens to pesticides?
Pesticides? That's out west.
Okay. So when the grain gets here, it has no pesticide.
Well, not that I know. Mm. Well, they could have had it and put it in out there, but we never did.
But it isn't a pollution problem.
We had to, with some kind of bugs in them or something. But we had with, I forget this guy's name, but he used to come in and do it anyways. And he fumigated the bins, and they'd seal the lid all up and everything so it couldn't get out, and they'd leave it for a week, and then you could, what they'd call, turn it over. They just run it down over the belt and back up and right back in the bin again. Just to air it out.
Yeah.
And then they would sample it and see if it's if the little termites are dead or they're alive or what. And then if they're dead, or if they found one live one, they'd fumigate it again. And then when they were dead, then they would take them, we used to call a monitor. And it shook like this. And the grain would go down and they would fall through the holes, eh? And the bugs and that would just keep going. And they'd put it over the monitors, air it out, and away you go.
You mentioned another. Tell me about rats.
Rats? They had rats down at Pool 4 the size of cats. Cats. Do you know how big it is? And I tell you, boy, they weren't as scared of you. I give one a kick in the ass one day. He flew about 15 feet. He turned around. He shattered his teeth, looked at me, and charged towards me. And I jumped up on the top of the hood there and sat there. He was down below. Whoa, was he mad.
So
they're big.
There are rats.
Oh, when I went Pool 6 at night, down near the Carnock, down near the grain door shack, the whole ground would move. Then they, I don't know who complained, but the city had to come in and exterminate.
Did they ever get control of that problem?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, went into them, eh?
Mm-hmm.
They go were all over the place. Yeah, they were good. They mice, you got the only type of mice you ever had was they come in the boxcars. You open the boxcar up and they'd come out with the grain. That's where they come from out west. I don't know how they got in the cars there, but they got in somehow. Yeah.
Pigeons, too, speaking of wildlife.
Pigeons, annex. Up in the annex, there was lots of pigeons.
So it sounds like it would be a constant battle to keep clear of the products created by these animals, apart from anything else, like rats.
Oh, we didn't have that much problem.
No.
It was the later years that they start getting rid of them. You'd be walking down the belt and you'd see a rat or something. And 9 times out of 10, they would take off.
What might interest or surprise people the most about the work that you did?
Handling the dust. Most people wouldn't even want to be in there.
Did you have masks or respirators or anything?
We have masks, but I never wore them. Like I said, I just go home and have a couple of beer and wash it all down. You're going to go somewhere. The only time I'd wear a mask if I had to go down and clean the screening tank.
What did that involve?
Well, you're going in another area again here. About the size of this room, this whole room, and it's 100 feet up. And you'd sit in a chair like this, chair, and You'd hang on, and they'd lower you down through a little trap door on the top of the bin, and you'd sit in that chair, and the chair would sometimes would spin, you'd get dizzy, but you hung on. They had a little flimsy harness used to go through the things here, so you couldn't fall out of the chair. But there was the cable was only about that thick, and it would be over to a would be on the chair would be built like that, and the cable would be up there, and down they'd wind you down. Three guys on top, one guy down in the chair. You go down that 90 feet, 95 feet, and then the screen used to be hung up. You'd have a big pole, and you'd be poking at it to get it to go down through the hole. And you'd poke it, and then you'd bounce back that way. And then you'd take a run at it. And there'd be a light down there, and you can't see, because the dust, once it gets into that hole, there's an updraft. And you see, you could barely see what you were doing. It was a terrible job that. Yeah, that was a screen. Clean them screening vents was a. Oh, that was, but it still wasn't as hard as shoveling 10 cars. That was a job in itself.
So those screens were at the bottom of the silo.
The screenings.
Yes.
Yeah. The bottom of the bin went like that. And to a hopper like that.
And it's 95 feet tall.
Yeah, 95 to 100 feet high.
And how? Circumference?
Well, it would hold 10 boxcars, 10 of them tankers. And with screenings, when they used to have screenings in the bins, they don't put them in there no more. It wouldn't all run out, and it'd be hung up on the sides.
Right.
So you'd have to go down there and sometimes get out of the chair and go and poke. Wasn't very safe. And then when we went to pool 6, you had to banjo them.
I've heard that term before. Banjo.
Pool 6. See, pool 6, their bottom of their bins wasn't hoppered. It was flat like this table.
Oh.
So you had a hole way over there. So you had two guys. And it was a steel thing like this with two handles like this. One guy on that side, one guy on this side. And you'd put the gear together, you'd grab it, put it in there, and pull it towards, throw it to the hole. That was banjoing.
Yeah, that's described to me by several people who, you know, didn't stay with the elevators, but they were workers for
a
while.
Yeah, you had to banjo them. That was a
Ron Christiansen. He is one who spent couple of summers, and he described that to me for the first time. It
but
sounds.
You know how you
hilarious.
Got down the bin? You went on the ladder. The ladder was in the side of the tank. You run up and down there like a monkey. And in them days, they didn't have safety harnesses. Nothing. You just went down there. And if when you got to the bottom, if the banjo would always be down there. They'd lower that down in case it came up. It'd cut you in half if it ever fell on you. But anyways, that was always down there, and the light. And then you went down on nothing. And you'd grab them rungs, and some of them would move. You're going backwards. Scary, scary. A lot of guys wouldn't go. They quit. Right there. You tell them you got to go down the bend? No. Well, that's part of your job. Well, I quit. And they quit.
Were there a lot of accidents?
Guys had not fallen down the bend. There was a lot of guys got hurt down in the bends, yeah. Pulled muscles, mostly. Oh. Back. You know, because that was hard work.
Yeah. I heard a case, I think, within the last 2 years in Manitoba. 64-year-old farmer drowned in a grain bin.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, because they, our bins, though, they were, I don't know, they weren't ventilated, but I don't know, they opened them up at the lids anyways. You could smell if anything was heating down there. If it was heating, it was heated grain, they wouldn't put you down there. Because it's fermenting, eh? It's like a gas.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't go down.
What would be the procedure? Let's say a bin is discovered to be heating.
Okay, what they wouldn't put you down there. They'd pull it out. They would pull it from the bottom, and if anything did stick on the walls, then they would take, I don't know, somebody would come and say, well, there's not enough gas there to hurt you or something, and you'd go down it. But otherwise, most of the time they were okay.
So it's just a matter of pulling it out and drying it, let's say?
No, just airing it.
Okay.
See, when they pulled it out, now it's got to go from here out of this bin, it's got to go probably travel down to the lake by the time it gets all the way around and all the belts and the legs and everything. It's pretty well aired out by the time it goes back again. If it's not, they would put it over a monitor. That one goes like this.
Yeah.
And they would shake it and thin it all out and air it out.
Well, that's 1 hour. So what I'd like to do is just shut it down now and maybe come back in the fall, because I'm going to know a lot more and I will have more.
You should take this stuff with you if you want and read up on it.
Well, I would.